Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Save big money at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. We have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Get free estimates fast using our easy do-it-yourself landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape products at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit JDPower.com for details and Menards.com for deals.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
Brad, how's it going? What have you been up to recently?
Well, my primary focus has been something that is daunting and exhausting, but happening nonetheless. And that is, I'm packing for a big move across the country because I'm going to be moving to Texas this summer.
Wow. Okay. So I assume you're moving with your fiance.
Yes. My fiance is the reason for the move because, long story short, she got a job down there. And so that's where she's working. She went down in February. She's been down there and we got a place set up already. And now my responsibility is like getting things packed up here and just like figuring out what we're selling and what we're taking with us because we're moving to a smaller place and just trying to sort all that out. And I have a lot of junk that I need to sort through and figure out how to pack and like probably have to put some stuff in storage unit. So it's it sucks.
So are you going through like a this is your life type of scenario where you're like breaking down every single thing that you own and making like a harsh judgment of like whether or not it should stay or go?
Yeah, I mean, so thankfully, like the way the situation is like I had a lot of stuff packed up anyway, just because I never really got a chance to like kind of like unearth a lot of the stuff, so, cuz like my living scenario has been kind of complicated because like of how things unfolded after my dad passed away. And so like initially like I was living in my grandma's old house and my mom and dad were going to be moving into this house, and I was just living in it as a place where like I didn't have to worry about paying rent until they sold their old house and moved into it. And then when my dad passed away, we had to quickly move out of the old house, and then my mom moved into this house as well. And so like I have a lot of stuff that is still kind of like packed up, or I didn't put out like, you know, full displays of like the different collectibles and stuff that I have. So like thankfully I don't have a ton to do there, but I've also gotten a lot of stuff since then. You know, like I get Lego sets sent to me that I build for and do reviews for on the site and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of stuff that I have to figure out like what to do and how to pack it up and like stuff that I can probably get rid of. And like I'm trying to consolidate some things, like maybe getting rid of some books and some movies that I don't necessarily need to have on physical media that I've accumulated over the years. And so it's just, yeah, it's kind of just looking around and being like, just do I need all of this shit?
Man, I bet you could have like one hell of like a pop culture fire sale kind of like yard sale type of situation where like anybody in your area who loves pop culture could come by and buy, you know, all the stuff that you don't want. But
yeah, absolutely. So I also have a lot of shelves. I have a lot of IKEA, those Calyx cube shelves from IKEA that mm-hmm. like I have because for, you know, just for books and things like that. And so I'm gonna end up having to get rid of a lot of those too. So so if you live in the Midwest area around Northwest Indiana and you would love having some IKEA Calyx shelves, you know, feel free to reach out.
Yeah, so how would people do that, Brad, if they're actually interested?
You can email me at onebadomen@gmail.com. That's onebadoman @gmail.com. If you might be interested in buying some cube shelves from IKEA.
Okay, cool. So last question. I don't want to like you know, have you give me your zip code or anything, but like, are you moving to an area that's like near Austin? Are you going to be able to like hang out with Jacob in person or anything like that? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, I will be able to hang out with Jacob in person. I won't be in Austin. I will be in San Antonio, actually. So and okay. that's about an hour, 15-minute drive away from Austin. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So it's a pretty cool area. I'd only been there a couple times before. And then like I spent some more time there while me and my fiance were trying to find a place to live. And whatnot. So I kind of got to explore the area, and I've come to understand that it's a very cool city. It's growing very fast. Apparently it's like the third highest growing city in America right now. And the only shortcoming right now that I can see is that it seems like their road system hasn't quite caught up to how quickly areas have grown. So there's a lot of congestion in certain areas where it feels like there shouldn't be, but they are trying to like do a lot of road construction to keep up with that, but it seems like it's pretty difficult. But there's new stuff sprouting out all around, and like when we were looking for apartments, like a lot of people were telling us, they were like, a year ago, like none of this was here, and I was wow. like, wow, that's crazy.
I remember hearing that traffic in Houston is like especially
notorious I've heard that too.
For being awful. So hopefully it's not as bad as there. And then the only other thing I would say is that have you ever seen the movie? I think it's called Cloak and Dagger.
I haven't.
Okay, so it's from the 80s, and it stars, I want to say it stars Henry Thomas, but also Dabney Coleman. And it's like one of those great, I think you would love this movie even now, Brad. It's one of those movies that like I loved as a kid. It's very much in that sort of like Goonies, Amblin era of like making movies about kid protagonists going on adventures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that movie is set in San Antonio. So that might be a fun thing to watch and sort of compare to your new surroundings once you guys get there and get all settled in.
Right on. Yeah, I'll have to do that.
Okay, so let's get into what we've been watching. I watched Park Chan-wook's The Handmaiden, which came out in 2016. Did you see this movie? Or
I have not seen it, actually.
This is a really, really good movie. Park Chan-wook is really like firing on all cylinders here. The only thing I knew about this film going in was that you should not watch it with your family. And that is absolutely the case, because there's like some pretty...
very steamy, right?
Explicit sex stuff. I found this to be just a really beautiful movie with really fun reveals. And there's like gorgeous production design and cinematography. Really excellent performances across the board. Some of the sex scenes feel a little male-gazy. But I feel like there are reads of the movie where you could kind of justify the way that those scenes were filmed. In any case, I wasn't really bothered enough for me not to recommend it to people. I would say it's a little long, and the movie goes to some unexpected places and has some eyebrow-raising moments that definitely will not be for everybody. But I thought that there was a lot to like about the overall experience, and watching this reminded me that I really need to prioritize checking out Thirst, the vampire movie that he made back in 2009. I've never seen that.
So I haven't seen that either.
Yeah, man. I think HT is a fan of that movie, so I'll have to ask her about that. But The Handmaiden is streaming on Prime Video right now. And if you're looking for, just something with like sumptuous cinematography and like a really fun sort of twisty turny story, check that out. I also watched Papillon for the first time. Have you ever seen this? The movie from the 70s?
Nope.
Okay, so Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman star in this movie. It's loosely based on the real life story of an innocent man who is wrongly convicted of murder and is sentenced to life in prison in French Guiana. And McQueen plays that character, who is basically like, as soon as this movie starts, he's instantly cooking up plans to escape. And on the way to the prison, he meets up with this really rich guy. He's a forger. Played by Dustin Hoffman, and he offers to provide protection to the Hoffman character if Hoffman will fund his eventual escape by bribing the guards at the facility so he can, you know, work his way out of there. And this movie hits all the beats that you would expect from a prison break film. There are some really standout moments in it. There's a scene where Hoffman and McQueen are wrestling an alligator for real. You could tell that the alligator has its mouth taped shut, but still, like, that thing looks like no joke. And it's just kind of shocking to see major movie stars that close to danger.
Yeah.
There's a stunt that I won't spoil that really made my jaw drop near the end of this movie, that I was just kind of like, holy crap, a person actually did this. And we were just talking about like The Fall Guy and like how that movie is a love letter to stunts. And like, that is one, I thought about The Fall Guy watching that, like, man, there was like a real human being who did this thing. That is nuts. So that's Papillon. I found this to be a pretty bleak movie. And the thing is, the weird part about that is I'm not sure that that was the intention. I got the sense that the movie is supposed to be about like the triumph of the human spirit, because McQueen's character endures all of these awful things and he's like never broken, you know, like mentally he's always there and he's always locked in and he's always driven to try to escape even after like years of time go by and unimaginable setbacks happen to him. But at a certain point, I kind of found myself thinking like, man, it would just be way easier to kind of just give up on this idea of escape and kind of like settle into the rhythm of the life that you actually have instead of aspiring to a totally different circumstance, which I feel like is the wrong takeaway from this movie, but that's what I felt. So anyway, if you like 70s films and star turns from Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman, check this out. Papillon is streaming on Tubi right now. A couple other things I've been watching recently. Andrew Dominik's movie Killing Them Softly. I think this came out in 2012. Did you see this at the time?
I did, and it was supremely frustrating for me at the time.
Interesting. Okay. Scoot McNairy plays a guy who is sort of like a down on his luck guy who gets roped into robbing a mafia card game with his pal, who is this sweaty, gross, morally reprehensible guy played by Ben Mendelsohn. And obviously, the mafia doesn't take kindly to being robbed, so they send in this person named Jackie, who is played by Brad Pitt, to whack these guys and kind of send a message that the mafia is not to be trifled with. And I thought that there were flashes of stylish or tense action all throughout this thing, but most of the movie involves guys sitting in hotel rooms or bars or parked cars kind of talking about what they've done or what they're going to do, and the whole thing plays out against the backdrop of the 2008 presidential election and the economic recession that was happening at the time. And the parallels that the movie draws between organized crime and the way that our country operates are pretty on the nose, like pretty hard to miss. I thought the performances were really terrific across the board. And Brad Pitt gives a heck of a speech that ends this movie on a real like low note story-wise, but kind of high note filmmaking-wise, I thought. But what did you think about this movie, Brad? What was your frustration with it? Do you remember?
Yeah, so that's the thing is, like, I think that there's some great filmmaking here, but my biggest problem was that it really, like, hits on the nose how this is supposed to be an allegory for the economic downturn that happened in 2007 and 2008. Like, there's constant lingering on TV screens that are talking about what's happening, and, like, it just really, it's like, no, guys, there's something deeper here. Pay attention to it. It's like, yeah, we get it. Like, let's go. Move on.
Yeah, every single one of these like mafiosos is watching C-SPAN or listening to, AM radio or something where like the president is giving an address. Like at no point is anybody ever like watching sports or like doing any of the things that you would expect characters like these to actually be doing in this real situation. So I totally get how that would be a frustrating thing. This is another kind of like bleak movie. I mean, it's a bit of a downer overall.
But, yeah, for sure.
But there is like enough sort of, like I mentioned, those flashes of filmmaking from Andrew Dominik, who has not really made a ton of movies. I think he's only made 4 or 5 feature films or something like that. So I'm glad I finally caught up with it, but it's definitely not like a fist pumping like, oh man, this is a really cool mafia movie. It's much more like a bleak kind of thing that actually, like, when you think about the current hellscape that we're in, kind of feels like a little prophetic, even though at the time it was like this movie was released in 2012, and kind of like looking back on like the early Obama era and like being really cynical about the sort of hope that people had going into the beginning of that presidency.
Yeah.
And then now, and just like how completely fractured and shitty everything is, it just kind of feels like this movie actually kind of had an accurate attitude toward how everything played out in real life. So,
and that's kind of why I wish it was like a little more subtle about it, because if he had pulled back some and didn't make that like such an obvious thing, it might have like been something where like you could look back on it and be like, oh wow, yeah, this movie really like had something special there. But it just feels like it's way too obvious.
Yeah. Okay, the last thing that I wanted to talk about is I saw a film called Coherence that came out in 2013. It's a really, really small budget movie. Did you ever see this one, Brad?
No, but I remember hearing about it because I think it played Sundance, didn't it?
I think so, yes. It definitely feels like a Sundance movie. I was looking for a good high concept film. I just kind of like, I think it was a Friday night and my wife and I were like, what are we going to watch? Like nothing on any of my watch lists was really jumping out at me. And I was just Googling around you know, what is a great high concept film? Because I just wanted to see something that was like executed, you know, just a really cool like idea that was executed well. And I saw this movie Coherence pop up on a couple of lists online, and it's an ultra low budget sci-fi film that reminds me a lot of Shane Carruth's Primer. Did you ever see that?
The
time travel movie? Yeah.
Yeah, Primer's great.
I think Primer probably has like, that's one of those movies that I feel like a lot of cinephiles have seen. There's like, you know, it seems like it was like passed around kind of in hushed tones. Like, oh my God, you've got to see this movie. It's kind of incredible for what they were able to do. And like, it's so ambitious and everything. And Coherence is not as narratively tangled as Primer gets. Like Primer is like, I think we ran like infographics on Slash Film way back in the day of like, here's everything that happened in every timeline of Primer. And it's like this jangled mess of like, you know, all these crisscrossing lines and stuff where it's like actually pretty difficult to track on first view. Coherence is a little bit more, I guess, or ironically coherent than that. And I would recommend though, going in knowing as little as possible, but for those of you who need an extra push, I will say that the central conflict of this movie, which is revealed relatively early on in the runtime, is that it's about a group of friends having a dinner party while a comet is flying by overhead. And the comet seems to be messing with their reality in a really fascinating way. That may be enough to convince people to add this to their watch list. But I will say, if you still need like one more push, I'll give you a little bit more about the plot. If you're intrigued right now, like fast forward just a few, you know, a couple minutes or whatever, because I don't want to spoil this for people, but I do want people to watch this movie. So I'm like trying to walk this really fine line here. So there's an incident that happens where the power goes out and a couple of the party guests go outside and they realize that the power is out for the entire block. And they see a house with lights on in the distance and they like trek their way over there. And when they get there, they realize that it's an alternate reality version of them and the same party that they're having, and things kind of spin out of control from there. So the movie's called Coherence. It's on Prime Video and Tubi and Pluto TV and a bunch of other places right now. So check that out.
Also, the movie I was thinking of was Compliance, not Coherence.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. I remember that. That was definitely a Sundance movie. I wouldn't be surprised if Coherence was also a Sundance kind of thing, because it definitely has that vibe to it. It's like, it feels like it was made for, you know, $100 or something, and like a bunch of friends came over and shot it in somebody's house over the weekend. But it actually has like Loreen Scafaria, the director of Hustlers, is an actress in the movie.
Nice.
So she was a familiar face. And it has like some folks that you might recognize in there. But yeah, just a really interesting, super low budget movie. It's called Coherence, and I would recommend checking that out.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Brad, what else have you been watching?
I watched Billy Elliot for the first time, which is a movie that got some awards tension back in, like, what, 2003, I think it was?
Yeah, I've never seen this.
Yeah, so this stars a young, it's 2000, actually. It stars a young Jamie Bell, who you might remember from King Kong or Jumper, various movies. He's also Tintin in The Adventures of Tintin, even though he was motion captured to look like Tintin. And so this movie follows him as a young kid who he's living in Ireland at a time when there's the labor strikes are happening, and is Ireland or is it England? I think maybe it's, yeah, it's England. And so they, he is supposed to be taking boxing lessons, but then he kind of like is curious about these ballet lessons that are happening nearby. And so he kind of starts like doing it under the radar, and he's actually quite gifted as a young dancer. And the instructor is played by Julia Walters, who is Mrs. Weasley from the Harry Potter movies. And so it follows him as kind of like discovering that, and like his dad, who's kind of like a rough, gruff labor guy, being initially against it, and like, you know, him just trying to navigate that and figure it out. And it's just a really, you know, charming, inspirational kind of movie. You know, Jamie Bell shows a lot of talent as this young kid. You see, you know, why he would go on to become, you know, an actor as an adult as well. He's also a very skilled dancer as a child as well. And so, yeah, it's just one of those nice, inspirational family dramas that came out around 2000. And it's quite good.
Okay, awesome. So that's been on my list of things to check out for a long time, because I really like Jamie Bell. I feel like he's kind of like an underrated, like always solid performer. And this definitely seems like a, you know, one of the big early stepping stones of his career. So that is Billy Elliot. What else have you been watching, Brad?
I also saw Abigail, and I wanted to bring it up because it did not do super well at the box office. But if you've been on the fence about going to see it or anything like that, you should go out of your way to go see Abigail, because it is just like an awesome blast at the movies. It has kind of like the vibe of Ready or Not a little bit, with like some dark comedy thrown in with plenty of gore and violence. But it has a young girl vampire at the center of it, which adds a new wrinkle of fun, because the way she talks is like this, you know, menacing adult, but played by a young child. And she's fantastic in the role. And then on top of that, you have an awesome ensemble of people like Melissa Barrera and Kevin Durand and Catherine Newton, and all these people who have been tasked with kidnapping this girl that they don't know is a vampire, and then they're trying to survive. And it is like explosively bloody. It's surprisingly funny. Kevin Durand is particularly hilarious in it. And Dan Stevens is like the big standout. He's just a fantastic actor, and like I always am excited to see him pop up in anything. And in this role, like, he's just having a lot of fun playing his character. And the movie itself, it really is just a blast. So, like, if you're looking for, like, a good time and you don't mind some gore, please go see Abigail in theaters. It's great.
Yeah, and if you don't want to see it in theaters, I think it's actually available, like, as of today on...
It's only in theaters!
on video on demand. But yeah, I had a great time with this at the theater. And, like, this is the type of movie where I feel like you can grab a bunch of friends. And, like, as long as you're all on the same wavelength in terms of horror and stuff, I think people have a great time with this as, like, a group experience. Because there's some pretty gnarly moments in this movie. So what else have you been checking out, Brad?
I saw Challengers, and I love churros now.
Yes, that's the sole takeaway from that movie.
No, I loved churros before because they're delicious. But no, this Challengers is it's great. It's, I will say, I don't think Challengers is quite as sexy as the trailer would have you believe. Mm-hmm. There's definitely sexual tension abound and whatnot, but it's not like one of those like steamy kind of movies. Like, we're not talking about like a Basic Instinct or like a Fatal Attraction kind of here. And there's still like plenty of sexiness to be pulled from just like the scenes between that are like where there's, you know, implied sexual tension and things like that. The churro scene in particular is one of those. Mm-hmm. But all of the leads are just fantastic, from Zendaya to Mike Faiss to Josh O'Connor. They're a great trio in this movie, and watching the back and forth, both as tennis players and as characters, and like the way the movie plays out too, it has kind of like a Social Network structure where it keeps jumping forward and backward in time, and it really kind of, it makes the story that much more compelling to watch. And just seeing the competition unfold, especially because the soundtrack by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross is just like a pulsating electric, you know, field of energy. Like, it's awesome. I really dug Challengers, in spite of the fact that it wasn't quite as sexy as you might have thought.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies of the year so far. I loved it. Okay, you actually had a chance to see The Matrix in theaters.
I did, and I never got to see The Matrix in theaters. The first time I saw The Matrix, it's because I bought it on VHS at Kmart when I was a kid. Wow. Because everyone was talking about it, and I was like, I have to see this movie, and no one took me to see it in theaters, and so I bought it on videotape. Watched it, became obsessed with it, And so, yeah, never got to see it on the big screen. And so it was back in theaters. I don't know if it still has some showings left, but it came back because this year's the 25th anniversary of the original movie. So I went out of my way to go see this in theaters, and it still bangs, still rips. You know, I know every single beat of this movie. I've seen it tons of times, but watching it on the big screen, you know, it's a great experience. Like, this, just the way the sound of, like, that signature Matrix sounds of when you're, like, warping through the screen and mm-hmm. whatnot, and, like, the orchestral swells, like, just feeling that sound in a theater is just a great experience. And it was so great, too, because there was, like, other people there who were excited to see it, too. Like, there was a guy who sat next to me. He was like, have you seen this in theaters before? And I was like, no, this is my first time. He's like, oh, yeah, man. He's like, I'm so excited.
I was going to ask, like, how the crowd was. Like, could you tell if a bunch of people had never seen it before, or if this was just, like, a bunch of fans being, like, envelop me in this screen? Like, what was the vibe like?
I heard some younger people talking, like, that this was, like, it seemed like it was their first time seeing it in theaters. I don't know if it was their first time ever seeing it, but it was mostly people who, like, obviously were there because they wanted to see it again in theaters. And so there were some clapping moments and some people excited because, you know, they knew what was coming, and laughing in all the right places and whatnot. So, yeah, it was, and I would say, like, in a theater was probably, like, I don't know, like half full probably. So it wasn't bad for a repertory screening like this.
Yeah, not bad for a movie that you could stream at home pretty easily.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Excellent. Okay. And then what else have you been checking out?
So I rewatched the entire new Apes trilogy with Andy Serkis as Caesar, starting with Rise of Planet of the Apes, going through Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and then War for the Planet of the Apes. And it had been a long time since I had seen Rise. I had definitely seen Dawn and War more recently, though I hadn't seen War as often as I had seen Dawn, I don't think. So revisiting Rise was actually pretty refreshing, because my general impression of Rise was that it was fine, but it wasn't great. I think I ended up enjoying it more rewatching it this time. And I don't know if it's just because for some reason in my mind, I had this idea that, like, the visual effects weren't that great in that first one, but they actually are still pretty damn good. Like, there's only, like, a few questionable moments where I was like, ah, oh, that doesn't look that great. But there was never anything where, like, it felt like it was Jeff Bridges and Tron Legacy, you know, where, like, those visual effects have aged so badly that it looks like a video game. These, for being 2011, like, which is, you know, 13 years ago, like, they still really look fantastic. And I still really like the movie, too. It works. And it definitely improves as you move through Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes. But, man, I think I'm just so floored still by the fact that they make you care so deeply about these characters who, you know, who are human-like apes, obviously, but they're CGI creations fueled by motion capture performances. And just, like, there's no, like, disconnect because of that. You care about them so deeply. And I really was, like, moved so much again watching War for the Planet of the Apes, and, like, when Caesar, you know, ultimately dies, like, it is, it's a heartbreaking experience. And, like, the movies are beautiful. I love it. And I honestly got frustrated because I went back to see what kind of awards attention Dawn and War got. And I was supremely annoyed that it was technical, visual effects only. And I genuinely think that both Dawn and War are equally as good, if not better, than at least the original Avatar. And both Avatar and Avatar Way of the Water got Best Picture nominations. And that the fact that neither Dawn nor War got nominated for Best Picture is crazy to me.
I remember there being a big campaign at the time to get Andy Serkis
an actor nod. Yeah, I remember that too. And honestly, Toby Kebbell would have deserved one for supporting actor for playing Koba in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes as well, because he's amazing.
Yeah, man, I didn't have time to revisit this, but, like, hearing you talk about it makes me want to now. Like, I'm seeing the new Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes tonight, which you're going to talk about in just a second. But, like, man, now I'm, like, really regretting not making the time to rewatch that trilogy, because those movies are all so good. Like, I remember Rise being such a pleasant surprise. It's at the time, 2011, it kind of seemed like, oh, God, this is just another IP play. Like, what are you doing? Is this really going to be interesting? But despite the fact that the director ended up leaving the franchise after that. He only made that one movie of that trilogy, and Matt Reeves came in and directed the rest. It's still like really a really great movie. So I'm glad to hear that that it held up for you on
if there's one aspect that doesn't hold up, and I remember it not being good at the time too. And it sucks to like to say because it requires bad mouthing a specific person, but Tom Felton is not great in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, really? Yeah. Man, that's interesting. I remember, well, I don't know. I remember kind of digging what he was doing there because he's supposed to be like this punk, right? Who's like treating Caesar terribly and like that's my memory of it, isn't it?
Yeah, he is. He's basically this like slimy dickhead kid who just like mistreats the apes and stuff. But I just feel like he overplays it a little bit.
Okay. All right. So you saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, the new movie from Wes Ball. What did you think about that one?
I did. And man, I love this movie. It's very, very good. It's not a part four. It is like a part one in a new era for Planet of the Apes. It strikes this great balance between remembering the legacy of Caesar and the new Apes trilogy while still venturing into new territory by providing an adventure with completely new characters. The visual effects, of course, are incredible. The performances are outstanding. Owen Teague is a fantastic successor to Andy Serkis in the lead role. And it tells, you know, a unique story that fits perfectly in this franchise, and like giving us a whole new roster of characters to be invested in and watch grow and see, you know, where this takes us. And it's set so long after that new Apes trilogy that it provides enough time to like be disconnected from it, but it's still obviously much further from what we would encounter in Planet of the Apes. So like there's a lot of space here to play in, and I'm really excited to kind of see where that goes. And then, man, the orangutans in the Apes movies are like the MVPs, absolutely, because obviously Maurice was a favorite of the original, but Peter Macon plays Raka in this movie, and Raka is awesome in this movie. Such a cool character. Kevin Durand, this is a good year for Kevin Durand, and I hope this kind of like leads to kind of like a resurgence for him, because he's a good character actor, a great character actor even. And he plays Proximus Caesar in this, who's the king that you see in the trailer, who's like, what a wonderful day. And that on top of him being hilarious in Abigail, like I hope that he starts working a lot more, because he's great in this movie. Everyone is. I really, really dug Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So yeah, make sure you see it this weekend.
I just saw somebody say that Kevin Durand plays that character, and that blew my mind, because like I just saw him in Abigail. I know him from Lost primarily, and just like, you know, that does not square with the image of that Proximus Caesar character I have in my mind from the trailer. I'm like, that's Kevin Durand? Are you serious? What?
Yeah, bro? And whatever he's doing, like with his voice too, like he does such a great job. Like it's, if I didn't know it was Kevin Durand, like, yeah, like you said, you'd have no idea.
Okay, so let's get into one of my favorite segments, just to listen to mostly. I don't really participate in this section too much, but this is one of my favorite ways to sort of cede the floor to Brad here. What we've been eating. What have you been eating recently, Brad?
Indeed, it's been a while since I've been on the water cooler, and because I know we have millions of new listeners, if you don't know about this, I run my own like side thing called Brad's Junk on Instagram @lookatbradsjunk, where I've just been always personally interested in trying new flavors of snacks and soft drinks and like limited time fast food offerings and things like that. And so I always post about new stuff I find in grocery stores and like stuff that's been announced over there on Instagram if you want to check it out. And so here's some of the new things that I'll run through that I tried that were intriguing and interesting to me. So first, I tried Texas Barbecue Brisket Pringles. These are an exclusive new flavor available at Kroger and their sister stores. If you don't know which stores are Kroger sister stores, you can just like go to Kroger's website and they have a whole list. It's like stores like Ralph's and King Soopers and stuff like that. And these are actually really good. They have a nice combination of barbecue flavor with like the brisket seasoning that gives it like a smoky flavor. And I actually like them better than like any of the barbecue flavored Pringles that are out there. They're really, really good. It makes me wish that they were a permanent flavor and not just a limited edition exclusive, because they're quite tasty.
Okay. Texas Barbecue Brisket Pringles. Wow.
Yeah. If you're looking for a new spin on Pop-Tarts, even though Pop-Tarts have like a new flavor, it seems like every other month, they have a new thing called Pop-Tart Crunchy Poppers. And the best way to describe them is this is basically like if you took a Pop-Tart and turned it into a bite-size combo. It's a very, very tiny, like, crispy nugget that has a little bit of frosting on it and filling inside. And so they have two flavors out right now. It is they have the regular strawberry Pop-Tart, because that's the one everybody loves. Like, that's the standby Pop-Tart. And if you get unfrosted Pop-Tarts, you're a psychopath. And then they also have a chocolate one alongside of it. So I really like these. They have a nice crunch to them, and they come in like little snack bags. And so it's for me, it's just like, you know, a fun way to like enjoy Pop-Tarts in a different way. You can like sneak them into the movie theater. I fully recommend doing that. So that's Pop-Tart Crunchy Poppers.
Okay. And then you've tried some new Twizzlers?
Yeah, there's for the summer, there's new Twizzlers pink lemonade filled twists. Every now and then they come out with a new filled twist flavor. And so it's a chewier, softer version of Twizzlers usual licorice, because the Twizzlers normal licorice can be much more tough, I guess, to chew. Not like in a way that's like dissatisfying, but it's a harder licorice. These are more like a gummy licorice, and they have like a sweet flavored filling inside them. And so these are pink lemonade filled, and so they have just the right mix of like tart and sweetness inside. They have has a nice tropical flavor to it from the pink lemonade flavor, and I really like these. They're it looks like I actually just saw they brought back like the tropical twist one, which have like a mix of guava and like fruit punch, I think, in them. So both of those are good. The pink lemonade ones are the new ones. You can check those out and like find them in like the candy aisle. I found them in Walmart with all the other licorice stuff. Every now and then I get like reached out to like try new things that are like people are trying to get more attention by and stuff like that. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's like been kind of a rise and interest in freeze dried candy. Have you noticed or heard about this?
No, I can't say that I have.
Yeah, so I've started to notice it popping up a lot more in convenience stores and things like that. And really what it is there's these companies that take candy that already exists, like, you know, Skittles and Starburst and candy bars, like basically any candy that's out there, and they freeze dry it and repackage it. And it really changes how, like, it doesn't change the flavor profile, but it changes, like, the texture. So, like, they sent me a variety of things to try. So, like, I have a bag of freeze-dried Jolly Ranchers, and it basically turns them into, like, a sweet Jolly Rancher crunchy puff. And so, like, you eat it as if it were, like, as if it were, like, a Cheeto ball, basically. But it tastes like Jolly Ranchers. And so, like, I got some of those. They sent me one that is freeze-dried mini Charleston chews, and it makes the candy bar so that it's crisp, but it's... kind of like it's almost like a Whopper, but not quite as firm. And the mix of the chocolate marshmallow flavor is still intact and still delicious. I also have freeze dried Airheads, which look really funny because they look like giant like crunchy tamales, basically, like the size of them, like how big they blow up when you freeze dry them. But I had a bunch of, and I also have freeze dried ice cream too, which is interesting because like it's a little bit chalky, but it like if you let it melt in your mouth, it's like the taste is really good. And they have a bunch of flavors of freeze-dried ice cream as well, which is I believe is how astronauts eat ice cream. Like they have, because I remember having that like when I was a kid at the museum or something like that. Arctic Farms is the company that sent me a bunch of stuff, and they have a bunch of different things on their website, but they're not the only company that's out there that has freeze-dried stuff. Like you might find some in grocery stores at 7-Eleven and stuff. So if you're curious about it, like it's an interesting experience to like see the texture of like how candy has changed, about how the flavor still works.
Wow, I've totally missed out on this whole new rise that you're talking about here. This is wild. I did just remember, Brad, you were talking about the churro scene in Challengers earlier, and it reminded me that I had something that I can actually talk about in this section of the podcast. I had a churro donut from Parlor Donuts. Have you ever eaten at a Parlor Donut?
I haven't. I don't think we have Parlor Donuts near me.
Okay, so I just looked at, I'm on their website right now, I'm looking at their locations, and it looks like there are a bunch like around the Chicago area. So maybe next time you're in there, and it looks like Dallas and Houston over in Texas too. They have some in like LA and in looks like Arizona, but mostly it seems like sort of an East Coast Appalachian Trail almost kind of stretch of their locations there. But anyway, the donut is delicious. If you're near a Parlor Donuts, it's like a total game changer. I like Dunkin' Donuts personally, but I, after eating this churro donut, like their whole thing is they have like cookies and cream and like maple pecan and sandy beach and turtle cheesecake and like all sorts of like elaborate, you know, campfire elaborate type of stuff. And the donut itself is kind of like a almost like a croissant. It's like super fluffy, so it's not like a hard sort of packed cake donut or anything like that. It's much more airy of an experience, I guess.
It looks like we have a newly opened Parlor Donuts here that's only about 30 minutes away from me, so I'm gonna have to go try these out.
I think you're gonna like lose your mind because it was so delicious. So yeah, anyway, just wanted to give a quick shout out to that. So that's Parlor Donuts. Okay, and then you have one more thing you want to talk about, Brad.
Oh yeah, so this one, it was disappointing. We posted about this on Slash Film because it was just such a fun, like, weird random thing. But True Moo, who makes, you know, chocolate milk and different flavored milks, came out with a Star Wars blue milk. I think Kemp's Farms also has it as well. And both of those milk brands might be like under the same banner, which is why that happened. So I honestly don't know. But yeah, blue milk is obviously famously a thing in Star Wars from the scene where Luke has breakfast, lunch, what have you, with Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, and they're drinking blue milk. And it's so beloved by fans that you can buy it at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, although that's not actually blue milk. Like, it's not real dairy milk, and it's more of a frozen drink. But this is actually blue milk, except the problem is it's vanilla-flavored, which was frustrating to me because I don't like vanilla flavoring in milk. It just, like I like milk by itself. If you want to just color the milk blue, go ahead. Put some blue color dye in milk, and I'll buy it like an idiot. but having it be vanilla-flavored, like, I took a sip of it, and I was just like, yep, that's as disappointing as I thought it might be. Because it just tastes like a melted milkshake, but without any of, like, the texture that would make that, like, satisfying. You know, because sometimes I like a good melted milkshake. But in this case, it just, yeah, it didn't work for me. So I was pretty disappointed in Star Wars blue milk.
Okay, well, that's a bummer. But it seems like, you know, you actually had some hits on most of the other stuff that you enjoyed. So
I did. Yeah, I tend to be pretty satisfied with the things that I go out of my way to try.
Yeah, it's a good ratio there. Yeah, I definitely want to have you back after you try Parlor Donuts. I'm so curious to see what your opinion is of that. So,
yeah, I'm very curious.
Okay, so I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of the movies that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.